dark hair, eyes as dark as the ocean in a storm.
The skeleton of a great lion.
And it was so misty he couldn't make out what kind of an animal it was.
We love stories!
It's time for the apple seed, filled with stories for you and your family. All kinds of tales from all kinds of tellers. I'm Sam Payne, your host. What a pleasure to be with you today. We've got stories today from Lynn Ford, from Kevin Carr, from Heather Forrest and Odds Bodkin. And because we know that the sharing of personal and family stories can sometimes be the spark that ignites a memory or thought that you can share with the people that you love, I'll share with you a story about rescuing a magpie from a trap when I was a kid. And because we know that great stories can get into our hearts and minds in all sorts of ways, we'll have a conversation with our friend Cole Wissinger about a favorite movie, a time travel film called Primer. You won't want to miss any of it. And up first, we've got a story from Lynn Ford. Lynn Ford, who is inspired by the traditional tales from where she grew up in the Appalachian Mountains. The story we've got from Lynn today is about a woman who didn't quite understand that life's changes can be good. She complained about almost everything that happened to her. And one day she received a wonderful gift. And, well, that's the story. The story is called A Gift from the Sea, told for you by Lynn Ford, here on the Appleseed.
When you ask for a gift, when you wish for a gift, you should be ready and willing to receive it and everything that may come along with that gift. Once there was an old woman who walked next to the waters. She walked on the beach, and she looked out at the sea. And as she looked at the sun rising or setting, as she watched the big fish far out, rising up in the water, sinking back down in the waves, as she watched the seaweed coming up on the shore and looked at the starfish and the shells, she wished and she whined, "Oh, I wish I was not alone. I wish I had someone who loved me, someone who would always be there for me. Oh, how I wish I was not alone." Now, she was alone for some very good reasons. You see, she did not have a kind and loving heart. In the morning, if someone came to her, a woman saying, "Good morning," she would turn her nose up or turn her head away and walk past that woman without returning the greeting. If she was walking along and children said to her, "Hello, Auntie," she would tell them, "Get out of my way. Get away from me. You're shoving dust up toward me. You're knocking sand on my feet. Go away." If anyone tried to greet her, she never had a kind word for them, and she never did a thing to help anyone at all. And that was why she was alone. But she couldn't admit that to herself. She just wished, and she whined, "Oh, how I wish." Now, one morning, as the sun was rising, there she was, walking along the beach. Every now and then, she would pick up a shell, perhaps toss it back into the water, or put it into her basket. But she saw two big fish far out on the horizon. One great fish swishing her tail about in the water, and next to her, another, not quite as big as she. And the old woman looked at those two fish and watched the sun as it rose, and she wished and she whined, "Oh, how I wish I was not all alone in the world. How I wish there was someone who loved me, someone who would be with me. Oh, I wish I had a child, yes, a child all my own, a child to take care of. And then I would not be alone. I would love that child and tend to that child. Oh, how I wish I was not alone." And as she wished and whined, she noticed that there was now only one big fish at the horizon. The smaller of the two fish seemed to have disappeared, and a great wave was coming toward her, rising higher and higher on the water, and as it moved with great force, she stepped back on the beach. And when the wave slapped itself against the shore and pulled itself back toward the horizon, there was seaweed, there were starfish, there were shells, there was something moving in the seaweed. Well, the woman walked toward the seaweed carefully. This thing that was moving was bigger than any shell or starfish, and as she pulled the seaweed away, she realized it was a child, a little girl, a beautiful baby, long dark hair, eyes as dark as the ocean in a storm. What a precious thing! What a treasure! A child! And there was no one around. So the old woman picked up this baby. A treasure! A child for me! And she ran to the elders in the village and showed them what she had found. Now they knew of no missing child. They knew of no family mourning the loss of a baby. And so they told her that she could keep this little girl as her own. And right then she named the baby Dede, which means gift. She carried Dede back to her home. She cuddled and hugged and talked to the child.
Oh, Dede, coochie, coochie, coo, you will be my lovely little daughter. I will hug you and kiss you and love you. I will dress you in the finest clothes and feed you. And Dede said, oh, how cute you are, said the woman as she prepared a basket to be Dede's bed. Oh, how wonderful you are, she said as she bathed Dede in a little bowl and dressed her in soft cloth. Oh, you are the sweetest thing, she said as she fed Dede. But Dede smiled and did what babies sometimes do after they have eaten.
Blech.
Ooh. Oh, well, that's all right. I have more wonderful clothes here, and I can always make more, said the woman. And she bathed Dede again, and she dressed her in beautiful soft cloth. And Dede smiled her wonderful baby smile.
And again did what babies do. And again the woman bathed and changed Dede. But Dede was a baby. And babies do what babies do.
Ooh, said the woman. What was that? Oh, that smells so bad. Oh, what did you put in your diaper? Oh, no, said the old woman.
And again she bathed and changed Dede, but she burped her this time. And Dede smiled her little baby smile and went to sleep. Well, the woman put Dede into her basket and did the other things that she needed to do, and she took good care of Dede. Dede slept that night, and in the morning, she seemed to have changed. Dede was growing quickly. She crawled out of the basket herself. She began to crawl around the room. And the next thing the old woman knew, Dede was pulling things out of their places and knocking things down.
Stop, child, stop! What is wrong with you? Said the woman.
And Dede smiled and did what babies do.
Oh, no! And now you're making messes around the house, too.
But the woman took good care of that baby, and she bathed her and changed her and fed her, and she tried to build a little framework to keep Dede in one place. Dede slept that night. And the next morning, Dede walked out of the basket. She began to toddle around and pull things down. She began to make more messes, putting things in her mouth. She began to speak.
No, 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 no.
And the old woman began to get angry.
Stop saying no.
No.
You don't even know what it means.
No.
Let me put you into the frame. No! Dede, will you stop?
No.
Daddy, I am getting tired of this. No, 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 no. Daddy, you are getting on my nerves. No! Daddy, shut up!
Right then, the little girl was silent.
I cannot stand having you around. You are so much work for me. You're getting on my nerves. You are too much trouble. I am going for a walk. Stay here.
But Dede did not stay. Somehow she didn't look like a child anymore. Her face looked like the face of a young woman, and even though she was no bigger than a toddler, Dede glared at the old woman and walked right past her out the door.
I said stay here.
But Dede kept on walking.
Where do you think you're going?
Dede kept on walking, and the old woman tried to catch up with her, but Dede seemed to be moving very quickly. The old woman realized that Dede was walking down toward the beach.
Stop, child, stop.
Dede was walking out toward the water.
No, what are you doing?
Dede walked right into the ocean and sank beneath the waves.
No, no, oh, no, no. Dede, I'm sorry I yelled at you. I did not mean to be so angry. What has happened? Oh, my child, come back, come back.
But Dede had disappeared into the waters, and on the far horizon, the old woman saw one big fish with another fish not quite as big beside her. And as the sun began to set, a voice carried on the wind from the horizon to the ears of that old woman, and the voice said, "Woman, I heard your cries. I heard you mourning because you were alone, and I felt sorry for you. I sent to you my own child, my daughter, a gift from the sea. But you were not ready to accept all that went with having the gift of a child. And so my daughter has come back to me, and she will remain with me. And you, woman, you will remain alone." They say the old woman still walked by the beach, but because she did not understand that the kindness in her heart would keep her from being alone, she never found another gift from the sea. She may be alone still. When we ask for a gift, when we wish for a gift, we must be ready to receive it, and we must be ready to accept all that goes with that gift.
Lynn Ford with A Gift from the Sea, a story about perspective, of the consequences of complaining too much. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a story about rescuing a bird from a trap and a conversation with our friend Cole Wissinger about time travel, or at least a movie about time travel. You won't want to miss a word. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us. Before the break, you heard a story from Lynn Ford, a story called A Gift from the Sea. And there's a lot more coming up. You're going to hear Paddy and the Pooka by Kevin Carr. You won't want to miss that. But first, because we know that the sharing of a personal or family story can sometimes be the spark that ignites a memory for you that you might share with the people that you love, here's a memory of mine about rescuing a bird from a trap when I was a kid. An entry in the Radio Family Journal.
The Radio Family Journal with Sam Payne. A tiny little story for you and your family. Right when you need it. On the Appleseed.
When I was a kid, our house sat on a country road, with houses to the east of us and houses to the south of us. But to the north of us and to the west of us, there was nothing but horse pasture and vacant field. And beyond the field to the north, There were apple trees, hundreds of them, acres and acres of them. It had been that way for 100 years. Nobody's apple operation was enormous in my hometown, but when I was a kid, apples were all around us, always. And I remember an autumn day, me and Aaron Rhodes walking on the dirt roads that were the only way to get along that side of town. And we're about 13 years old, Aaron and I, and we're walking parallel to a wire fence separating the road from the orchard. The trees are heavy with fruit, and we've got no agenda at all. These are days when going for a walk along the apple orchards was something you might do for fun with a friend, and that's what we were doing. Dusk is kind of settling down on us, and one by one, the lights of our town are winking on. And suddenly, in the light of the waning day, we hear the urgent flapping of feathers. And it goes on for a while. It's coming from inside the orchard. And we go to the fence, and we put our hands on it, and we peer through the trees. And a couple of rows of trees away, we can see it. It's a box, a wooden frame, built taller than a person. Taller, at least, than either Aaron or me, and the wooden frame is covered in chicken wire. There's a door in one side of the frame, the size of a regular door into a regular room. It's the roof that's unusual. Most of the roof is made of chicken wire, but on one side of the roof, there's a hole, and the hole is marked by long wires around the hole, bending toward the inside of the box made of chicken wire in a kind of funnel shape, and inside the box, hopping around on the ground, crashing intermittently into the chicken wire, is a magpie. The box, of course, is a bird trap. It's there to catch magpies. It doesn't kill them. In fact, as traps go, it seems a pretty humane one. It's pretty easy for us to see how it works. The bird flies into the box through the hole, but can't get back out the hole because of the wire funnel, of which the bird is now on the sharp end. And the trap owner goes in through the door to gather the bird he's caught, and from there, who knows? Who knows what the fate of that bird will be? There were magpies all over the place in my town when I was a kid. They ate the dickens out of fruit in the orchards, and they had a lot of human enemies for that reason. People called them trash birds. Me, I thought they were the coolest birds, the stark, exotic blocks of black and white in their feathers. I loved magpies. I didn't know then that they're super smart, magpies, and in fact, they're one of a few non-mammal species that can recognize themselves in a mirror. They're symbols of good luck and good fortune in East Asia. There are poems and songs and paintings about them in China. But in my hometown, they were nothing but trash birds. Anyway, I stand there watching this magpie caught in this trap. And next to me, I feel the wire fence shake. Aaron is going over. In a flash, he's jumped the fence and closed the distance between us and the trap. "What are you going to do?" I asked. "I don't know," he said. "I've never done anything like this before." A few seconds more, and he has opened the door of the trap. He stands with the door open, waiting for the magpie to get it and fly out the open door. He waits a long time. We both look around. Sure, the apple farmer is going to show up any minute. All of us kids had raised each other on legends of grumpy farmers who walked their orchards carrying rifles loaded with rock salt to shoot kids who trespassed. We had totally made this up, but we believed it with all our hearts. My heart is in my throat by now, and I stand lookout while Aaron bounds into the trap and proceeds to chase that terrified magpie around and around the inside of the trap, both of them making enough noise that I know if an apple farmer steps out from behind a tree with a rifle full of rock salt, I'll never even hear him. And in what seems like a half hour, but is probably a half minute, Aaron has his hands around the bird and carries him out of the cage and lets him go. The bird hops to the ground, then to a branch, and then into the sky. Aaron turns, shuts the door to the trap, and then jumps back over the fence, but not before plucking a couple of apples. He hands me one as he comes back over the wire. We felt like, I don't know, like superheroes, vigilante defenders of the helpless. There's no telling how much we traumatized that poor bird, or how much damage to the farmer's crop we facilitated, not to mention the trespassing. We'd both grow up, I think, to be a little bit more conscientious about the causes we launched ourselves into, and for what reasons. At least I guess that's how we grew up. I haven't seen Aaron Rhodes in decades. But that night, we munched on those stolen apples and shivered a little in the cooling evening,
and grinned the grin of a couple of guys who have just stuck it to the man. A couple of guys who had wings of their own, of a sort. There was no feeling like it in the world for a couple of 13-year-olds walking home at dusk on the dirt road at the edge of town, looking over the neighborhood lights, winking on amid the acres and acres of apple trees.
The Radio Family Journal of Sam Payne, a tiny little story for you and your family, right when you need it, on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining me for that entry in the Radio Family Journal. Stories from Kevin Carr, Heather Forrest, and Odds Bodkin coming up in just a bit. But first, a conversation with a friend. Great stories come into our lives in so many ways, through the tales that we tell, from teller to listener over generations and generations sometimes, through the books that we enjoy, the songs that we listen to and love, through the food that we eat. Food can be a deep well of stories. And, of course, through the things that we choose to see on film and on television. It's my great pleasure to be joined by movie reviewer Cole Wissinger. Cole, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Sam.
You know, I've seen a lot of time travel films. And time travel is sort of that's good for a lot of table talk, right? Because I think I never saw a time travel film that worked. You know, I mean where the time travel concept was airtight. But the one we're going to talk about today sure is interesting. A little film called Primer. Tell us about this movie.
You weren't convinced of the time travel merits of A Kid in King Arthur's Court when you first saw it, Sam? I'm surprised, didn't you? No, Primer takes a whole different angle to the time travel narrative because it does it with a true scientific mind first and movie and storytelling mind second.
Right.
And if you make it through the whole hour and a half runtime, like a little less, like it's a very tightly scripted story that is pretty dense for your first viewing and to be introduced into the idea of time travel.
To commit to watch this film really is sort of to commit to watch it twice, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you'll feel like you've watched it about four times because as we keep going back in time, we see the same scenes over and over again, but they play them in a new way because you're coming across it for the second time within the context of time travel. And if that sounded confusing, it's to say nothing of the actual movie.
Right. And for people who aren't familiar with the film, again, it's this little low budget film made in 2004, and acquaint the unacquainted with Primer.
These two scientist friends are just working at a lab trying to figure out anti-gravity, and they accidentally figure out time travel, essentially. And so they make these two little boxes where if they sit in it for 6 hours with the box running, they're going backwards in time 6 hours. So they can look at what stocks performed well by day close, jump into the box, go back 6 hours, and then make a little bit of profit from their invention, because that's what any good scientist would do.
Right.
And then infighting and drama proceeds as they decide how to ethically or, you know, in the future use this technology that they've so happily stumbled upon.
And why did it become an important movie experience for you?
I try to think about how I come across movies. You mentioned its budget, and it truly is hard to impress if you haven't seen it how low budget and independent this movie really is. Everyone in my generation has seen a movie like Interstellar that tells a grandiose space adventure story that comes right back to gravity being the cause of time travel. And Christopher Nolan, the great filmmaker that he is, made that for $165 million. And these two just actual scientists went out and made a movie with five friends for $7,000 they had in their back pocket. And I like it more. And this movie presents the idea for me of the independent movie. How low budget are we willing to watch? Yeah. This sits on the line of that indie threshold of the Sundance, the festival kind of movies, where there is such a thing as too indie for me, and there's such a thing as too blockbuster and mainstream for me. But this one sits right at the perfect line of not everyone's heard of it. It's a little bit weird. It's a little bit, you know, different. Not everyone's going to love it. Yeah. But I happen to love it.
And it really is so low budget that all there is are the ideas, right? I mean, it's a film that is completely stripped down to the ideas. Like the machine itself, the time travel box is really not much more than that, right? I mean, it's not there aren't a lot of bells and whistles. It's more
and when
like
they jump in the box, there's no big CGI scene of like representing time travel. You're just got a camera on a box, and you assume that they're inside the box.
There's something really lovely about creating a story that's so stripped down that all there is the story, you know. And these guys would go on to make other films, but none really captured the imagination of the public that saw it quite like Primer did. This notion of, again, these pretty wonky science-y ideas being expressed in this film that anybody could kind of get down into. Again, it may take a couple of times. It took me a couple of times, I got to admit, to sort of come to appreciate all that was there, you know. But what a cool experience. And also, as you talk about it, you know, you're talking about a film that not many people have heard of, but that you love. There are some fun storytelling opportunities there, aren't there? As you find yourself getting to introduce friends to a film that you love, and you get to do it a lot because not a lot of your friends have seen it, right?
Exactly. This is a movie about discovery. These two friends happening upon something that's so much better than what they thought they were going to get. And that's how I felt coming across this movie. You know, there's so many ways that we find movies out there. And as the movie expert in my friend group, it's often my responsibility and my joy to get to be able to sit down with someone that sees a movie that I love for the first time, to be able to share that moment that I discovered it with them, and then to be part of them seeing it for the first time. Even the biggest movie that everyone's seen, like Avengers Endgame, right, made billions and billions more dollars than Primer ever did at the box office.
Sure.
But we all saw it once for the first time.
That's right.
And you can never quite get that back.
And who are you going to introduce that movie to now? You know, you don't get that joy because everybody's seen it.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have a Primer in your pocket. That's kind of a fun experience.
You've got it.
Well, what a pleasure to chat about Primer with Cole Wissinger, a member of our BYU Radio family. It's great to have you with me, Cole. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Sam.
Great stories come into our lives in so many ways, and it's always a pleasure to chat with Cole about movies that he loves. It's our favorite thing to talk about. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a story called Paddy and the Pooka by Kevin Carr. It's from a collection of stories called King of the Pipers. You won't want to miss it. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's great to have you back with us on today's episode of The Appleseed. Before the break, because we know that the sharing of personal and family stories can sometimes be the spark that ignites a memory for you that you can share with the people that you love, I shared a memory about rescuing a bird from a trap with my pal Aaron Rhodes when we were kids. And, of course, because great stories come into our lives in all kinds of ways, we had a great chat with Cole Wissinger about a favorite film, a film called Primer, a time travel film. Up next, a story called Paddy and the Pooka. This is Kevin Carr, who has performed stories and songs all over the world and with all kinds of musicians and storytellers. He also teaches the fiddle. And this story is about a musician, albeit not a very good one. His ability to play music changed, however, when he met a mysterious creature called a pooka, one of the Irish shape-changing spirits. The magical being whisked the piper away to a magical party where he was asked to play all night. And therein lies the story. Here's Paddy and the Pooka, told for you by Kevin Carr on The Appleseed.
Once there was a man named Paddy, and he had always wanted to play the bagpipes, and he managed by hook and by crook to get himself a set of pipes. And he learned to play one tune. It was called the Black Rogue. And when he had learned to play the one tune, he set himself up as the local piper, which was not hard to do, because he was the only piper in that part of the country. And so, naturally, he could tell everyone that he was the best piper in that part of the country. Now, the people all around were mad for dancing. They loved to dance. Any opportunity, they'd clear the furniture away, and they'd have themselves a dance. And they'd meet at the crossroads, and they'd dance at wakes and funerals, and at weddings, and at christenings. So they'd always invite Paddy along, but they knew his limitations of repertoire. They'd say, "Ah, Paddy, have you brought your pipes?" And he'd say, "I have." "Well, give us a tune, will you? Will you play for us the Bucks of Oranmore?" Paddy would say, "I don't know that." "Well, will you play the Kesh Jig?" And Paddy would say, "I don't know that." And they'd say, "Well, Paddy, what do you know?" And he'd say, "I know the Black Rogue." And they'd say, "We hate that one." And then they'd laugh, and they'd have him play the Black Rogue. And he'd play away all night long, and they would dance until the wee hours of the morning. Now one night, Paddy was on his way home from one such festivity, and he found himself somewhat over-refreshed, and he had to pause by the side of the road to take a nap, and he laid down in the ditch and he fell asleep. And he woke in the middle of the night with something wet pressing against his face, and he tried to shoo it off, and at last he opened one eye. And he started because there was the snout of an animal right up in his face. And he got to his knees and he looked. But the night, which had been clear and warm, had gotten chilly, and it was so misty he couldn't make out what kind of an animal it was. And he got up and he started to move around the animal, but the animal kept turning to face him. Well, Paddy moved to the other side. He thought perhaps this was some sort of large pig. But then he tried to get a better look, and now it looked to be some sort of goat. Well, he moved around the other way, and the animal kept turning to face him. And now it appeared to be a pony of some kind, or no, now it looked to be a cow. Finally, Paddy said, in desperation, "Will you hold still so I can see what manner of creature you are?" And the creature, which by this time had grown to the stature of a large horse, said, "Paddy, don't you know me?" No, I don't believe I've had the pleasure." And the creature said, "Paddy, what night is it?" And Paddy thought to himself, "It is the..." And he realized that he was in some trouble, because it was the wee early morning hours of the 1st of November. "That's right, Paddy. I'm the Pooka of November." Now, Paddy had heard the stories about the Pooka of November, which was a creature well known for being able to change its shape. And it was also well known that if the Pooka of November came for you and took you away, oftentimes you'd never come back again. And Paddy said, What do you want with me?" "Paddy, I have need of the greatest piper in all of Ireland." And Paddy said, "Yes, but what do you want with me?" "Oh, Paddy, don't be so hard on yourself now. I need you to come with me to a frolic." "And where might this frolic be?" said Paddy. "Well, it's on the slopes of Croagh Patrick. "Oh, Croagh Patrick, said Paddy. "The priest has put a penance on me and told me I had to make a pilgrimage to Croagh Patrick." "What for?" asked the Pooka. "Well, we stole the priest's goose, and we ate it for supper."
"And you confessed that to the priest?" asked the Pooka.
"Well, no," said Paddy. "We invited the priest to supper."
"So you'll go with me," said the Pooka.
"I suppose I will," said Paddy. And Paddy climbed up on the Pooka's back, and they took off at such a great rate of speed as was not seen again in Ireland until the invention of the BMW motorcycle. And the tears were streaming out of Paddy's eyes, they were going that fast, when the Pooka called over his shoulders and he said, "Paddy, will you shorten the road for us? Will you give us a tune? Will you play The Bucks of Oranmore?" And Paddy started to say, "I don't know that," when the Pooka roared, "Play it anyway!" And in fright, Paddy buckled on his pipes, and to his astonishment, the bucks issued forth. Now, all too fast, they hit the slopes of Croagh-Patrick, and I do mean hit. Paddy was thrown from the Pooka's back, and he stood up just in time to see the Pooka vanish down a small cave, and he followed along. And he came out of the small cave into a large cavern, which was lit with torches. And inside he saw more than 100 wild-eyed, white-haired women. And he heard one of them exclaim, "Pooka of November, who have you brought us?" And the Pooka said, "I have brought the greatest piper in all of Ireland." And Paddy said, "Where is he? I'd like to meet him." "Hush, hush," said the Pooka, "Paddy. It's you. Would you like something to drink before you play for us?" And Paddy said, "Oh, please." And just then a little door opened in the side of the cavern, and out came a goose. And the goose had a little platter outstretched on its wings, and it waddled over to Paddy. And as Paddy reached for the drink, he got a good look at the goose. And he realized that he knew the goose. And he said, "What is it?" asked the Pooka. Paddy said, "That is the same goose that we ate. It's the priest's goose." "Never mind that," said the Pooka. "Paddy, you've had your drink now. Give us some music." So Paddy buckled on his pipes, and he hoped that they'd be satisfied with the Black Rogue. But the Black Rogue was not all that issued forth from Paddy's pipes. To his great astonishment, out came every jig, every single jig, double jig, treble jig, every slide, every reel, every hornpipe, every fling, every slow air, and every polka that had ever been heard in Ireland. One after the other, it was a geyser of music, and those women began dancing and twirling and singing. It was a tremendous occasion. And when Paddy had played every bit of music that had ever been heard and composed in Ireland, he had no choice but to go on, and he played Beethoven. He played Brahms. He played the Beatles. He played a little Rolling Stones. Some Elvis Presley. Every other type of music in the world. Until all too soon, there was the sound of a cock crowing in the distance. And the Pooka said, "Paddy, time now, we have to stop. Because if you don't stop playing now, I'll never be able to take you back again." And let me tell you, Paddy was having such a grand time playing all this music that he was sorely tempted to stay with them forever. But at last, the thought of his old mother back on their farm, working all alone, wondering where her son had gotten to, well, that thought tugged at his heart, and reluctantly he put away the pipes. Now the Pooka went around with a big red sack, and he said,
Never let it be said that we here in the other world don't pay the piper. And each one of those wild-eyed, white-haired women reached into her apron and pulled out a handful of gold and put it in the sack until the sack bulged almost as big as Paddy's eyes. "For me?" says Paddy. "Aye," said the Pooka. "It's for you, Paddy, and that's not all. Look behind door number 2. And he looked over, and out of the little door came that same goose, this time with a solid silver set of pipes. Paddy, with trembling hands, he took the pipes, and he took the big sack of gold, and he put them in the case with his own pipes, and he bade farewell to all those women, and he got on the Pooka's back, and they shot out of that little cavern like the shot out of a cannon. And traveling at that same rate of speed, they whizzed over the countryside until they came to the same spot where they had met the night before. And Paddy tumbled off the Pooka's back, and he was unconscious. And he didn't come to until the sun was high in the sky. And when he woke up, he had such a headache. He got to his feet and put his hand on his forehead. And he thought to himself, well, a headache like this is a small price to pay for a dream like that. All that music. A dream like that would sustain a musician such as myself for the rest of his life. And Paddy reached down to pick up his own pipes case. But it was heavier than he remembered. His fingers and his hands shook as he opened the case and found inside not just his old set of pipes, but a shining, solid silver set of pipes as well, and the bag of gold. He shut the case and jumped up, and yelling like a madman for all the neighbors to come, he ran down the road until he had a crowd of people behind him, and he led them all into his mother's kitchen and sat them down and began telling them the same story that I am telling you. And in the middle he said, and if you don't believe all of this, you may count my gold. And so he passed his red bulging sack around, and as he was finishing the story, he noticed that each neighbor who would look into the sack began to laugh and to chortle and to giggle. And finally he said, why are you laughing at my gold? And one of them said, why, Paddy, why don't we just count all this gold? And that neighbor dumped the sack onto the table, and out came a shower of golden autumn leaves. And Paddy said, but wait, wait, there's me new set of pipes, now listen to this. And he buckled on the solid silver set of pipes, and he began to play. But the only sound that came out of the pipes was the voice of the dead goose. Sadly, shaking their heads, the neighbors walked one by one out of the kitchen, and the last person out of the door with a little tear in her eye was Paddy's own mother. And after she'd left and he was alone, Paddy was broken-hearted, and he didn't understand. But at last he remembered he still had his own set of pipes, and he could still play the Black Rogue. So he buckled on his own set of pipes. But instead of the Black Rogue, out came a piece of music that had never been heard in that part of Ireland before. And the neighbors heard it, and they didn't recognize it, and so they knew it must have come from the other world. And one by one they came back into the kitchen in time to hear Paddy play another tune and another tune in a fashion that was wonderful. And it wasn't long before Paddy became known as the greatest piper in that part of Ireland.
Paddy and the Pooka from Kevin Carr about a magical experience that made a poor piper into a master of his craft. Up next, Heather Forrest with a song called Zigzag Walk. Can you think of anything that walks in a zigzag? This song is about a crab learning to walk from its mom. Heather Forrest with Zigzag Walk on the Appleseed.
Under the waves at the bottom of the sea, a little crab no different than any other, hurried along in a zigzag walk, following after her mother. The mother crab stopped, turned around and said,
"Why are you scurrying side to side in that ridiculous zigzag walk of yours? Walk straight. Come forward now, like other creatures do."
"But, Mother," squeaked the little crab, "I learned to walk from you." And with that, the little crab, no different than any other, zigzagged away after her mother. I zigzag walk and I zigzag talk. I zigzag live and I zigzag give. If you want to see something different from me, look at what I learn at your knee. I watch how you walk and I watch how you live. I watch what you take and I watch what you give. Everything I know and everything I do, I learn first watching you. I learn by watching you. And with that, the little crab, no different than any other, zigzagged away after her mother. I zigzag walk and I zigzag talk. I zigzag live and I zigzag give. If you want to see something different from me, look at what I learned at your knee. I watch how you walk and I watch how you live. I watch what you take and I watch what you give. Everything I know and everything I do, I learn first watching you. I learn by watching you.
Heather Forrest with Zigzag Walk. And since we've been enjoying some musical storytelling, why not wrap up today with something from Odds Bodkin, the wonderful musical storyteller. This is a story about some smart men and one man who had common sense. Which is better, smarts or common sense? Gonna find out in The Lion Makers, told for you by Odds Bodkin, here on the Appleseed.
There were once four wealthy men from India, Brahmins. Three of the Brahmins had studied all their lives and were filled with knowledge. Well, the fourth Brahmin, well, he had common sense. One day, the four friends were seated, and they decided to go on a journey. The three who had all the learning said to one another,
"Well, I think that we know so much now that we should go out and find a king who will pay us a fortune for what we have learned."
And the second one said,
"Oh, yes, indeed. We are so very, 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 very wise. We must go out and sell our wisdom to the highest bidder."
And the third said,
"That's right. We know so very much now. To the highest bidder goes our wisdom."
They looked, however, at their fourth friend, who only had common sense.
"Yes, but what do we do with him? He knows nothing."
"Yes, it's true, he knows very little."
"Yes, what do we do with him? Let's not take him."
"No, we should take him."
"Yes, we should take him, he might be helpful."
And their friend looked at them and thanked them for bringing him along. They began their journey. Along the road they walked, and then they saw something in the field.
"What is that?" there. Let us go see what it is, so we know even more. This way.
The four Brahmins walked to it, and they discovered the skeleton of a great lion.
Look, a lion. Roar, roar, roar. You know what we should do? Let's demonstrate all that we know. Let's bring it back to life.
Yes, I think that is a good idea, but bring it back to life with all our learning.
Why not? Why not?
The fourth Brahmin, the one who had common sense, looked at his friends and said,
My friends, the very interesting idea. but I caution you, this is a lion.
Oh, that does not matter. I will give it flesh and blood. Yes, I can do that.
Yes, and I will give it skin. New skin. Yes, new skin.
Yes, and I will give it the breath of life. The breath of life. Yes. Let's bring it back to life.
Once again, their friend with common sense looked at them and said,
My friend, it's a lion. It's a lion. You bring it back to life, it might jump up and eat you.
Silly fellow. Silly fellow. Let's get to work.
At that point, their friend turned to them and said,
Well, my friend, you'll forgive me, I hope, if I climb this tree while you bring the lion back to life. Go ahead if you wish. Climb the tree if you wish.
Yes. Go ahead, silly fellow.
The fourth Brahmin climbed the tree and watched as his three friends went to work. The first Brahmin added flesh and blood. The second added skin. And the third leaned over and breathed in the breath of life. Up rose the lion. It roared mightily at all of them, and then it promptly gobbled them up. Off it went, with a full tummy. Meanwhile, the Brahmin, who was up in the tree, waited a little while and, looking every which way, went home. So, it is said that a little bit of common sense is at least as good as a great deal of learning. And one should always remember never, ever to make a lion.
Odds Bodkin with a very old story told for you in a new way. The wonderful musician and storyteller, Odds Bodkin. What a pleasure to bring you these tales today. Stories from Heather Forrest and Kevin Carr and Lynn Ford. Conversation with Cole Wissinger and more. I'm Sam Payne. Our audio engineer is Carly Robison. Our producer is Jeff Simpson. For more stories and more tellers, you can visit us online at byuradio.org/appleseed, or you can share your own stories with us at theappleseed@byu.edu. Google the Appleseed podcast and subscribe for something new just about every day from the show. I can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by the Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.
Hi, it's Sam again. Thanks so much for joining us for today's stories on the Appleseed. There will be more next time. We've been bringing tall tales, fairy tales, folk tales, personal tales, historical tales, and more to the air since 2013. We hope to be doing it for many, many years to come. And if you like the Appleseed, you may enjoy The Lisa Show or Top of Mind or Constant Wonder, all shows produced by BYU Radio that you can find at byuradio.org or by Googling the titles of any of those shows. I'm Sam Payne. We'll see you next time.